You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Now, does your life feel optimized, honed for peak efficiency, personal, work, or kids' schedules carefully arranged for maximum productivity, diets juiced for balanced macros, etc.? If this is you, your life, does it feel like that's working for you? Do you think you're better off being as efficient as possible? Our next guest says that optimization is all around us, and not just at the daily personal level. Companies and organizations have been using optimization for generations, constantly trying to grow upward, outward, and better inward. The results, she says, have been lucrative up to a point, and they've come with lots of downsides. She toured the country finding examples of the impact of optimization and meeting people who resisted it one way or another. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see yourself as an optimizer in your work life, your personal life? Have you seen your workplace do some kind of optimization for better or worse? Or have you maybe gone off the grid in some way, picked a slower path, a slower pace of life and work? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Coco Crummy is an applied mathematician and writer based in the Pacific Northwest. She's the founder of a scientific consultancy, and her new book is called Optimal Illusions, The False Promise of Optimization. Coco, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Glad to be here.
Now, I want to talk about your origin story a little bit, because your career up to a point would have made you put you at ground zero of optimization as a mathematician in Silicon Valley. Where were you? What turned you away from that?
Well, you know, it goes back even farther still. I grew up in the Bay Area, sort of on the cusp of an earlier tech boom. And then I went east for college and grad school at MIT, which was another center of optimization, and came back to Silicon Valley when it was sort of roaring into the latest tech boom. And, you know, the book is a little bit a story of my own disenchantment with that world and how I made it from there to a remote Pacific Northwest island.
Now, can you explain this concept of optimization? Just set it up for people who haven't thought about it a lot. What do we mean when we say optimization?
Sure. Well, I like to start with a couple definitions. There's the technical one, and then there's the more colloquial one. The technical one is probably familiar to anybody who works in engineering or statistics, mathematics, and even the corporate world. And it's this idea of taking an objective function or something that you want to maximize and a set of constraints or parameters and solving that equation or that set of equations to get to the best outcome possible given your constraints. Now, the more colloquial definition is this idea of optimizing, of controlling the natural world in some way in order to lead a better life or make the best of what you have. And I argue in the book that mindset has, well, it grew out of technical roots, as well as some cultural origins in kind of the founding of our country. It's pervaded our daily lives in these incredible and enormous ways.
Yeah, it's reading your book, you know, I thought, okay, yeah, Silicon Valley or a big business or General Electric, of course, they're trying to optimize. But reading your book, I think about all the ways, all the things we see advertised to us as ways to optimize our diets or maximize the output of our time, even when we're not working. It's almost like an ideology has emerged where optimization is our optimal goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you spend any time in or around Silicon Valley, right, you see it everywhere, from billboards for technical things, optimizing HR or optimizing your servers, to really everyday things, right? You see it on vitamin labels. There is this sort of cult. I mean, you alluded to it being a religion, and I very much think it shares some features with religions or cults, right? But there's this cult in Silicon Valley of eating or drinking these products that allow you to get sort of optimal nutrition with the least amount of time and effort. So you kind of drink your diet and there's no attention to whether it tastes good, whether it's enjoyable, whether you're sharing that meal with people you care about, sort of the traditional reasons we would come together and eat in the first place beyond simply feeding ourselves.
Talking to Coco Crummy about her new book. It's called Optimal Illusions, The False Promise of Optimization. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Coco, you were just hinting at something that I wanted to ask about, and you talk about a lot in the book, is optimization sounds like a rational process, but it starts with deciding what we want to optimize in the first place. And you spend time on North Dakota sugar beet farms a lot to in your research for the book and leading up to it. And you raise like, okay, if we want maximum yield, that's going to mean one thing for optimization. If we want maximum profit, that might mean something different. If we want maximum soil preservation, something different still. The list goes on and on. How important is it to figure out what we're trying to optimize in the first place?
Well, I mean, I think that's key. And, you know, at the same time, one of the rejoinders to this argument or to my book that I hear from the tech world especially, right, is that, okay, we can admit that optimization or the fruits of some optimization haven't necessarily been good, right? So if we optimize agriculture simply for yields and forget about soil regeneration, or we forget about the communities that optimized agriculture affects, then, you know, that maybe isn't the best thing, but the solution is simply to change what we're optimizing for. And while I think that can be helpful, certainly in certain cases, there's this larger embedded idea that we should be optimizing in the first place.
And can you talk about what you see as the harm of the optimization mindset in the first place? Whatever we're optimizing, how do you see it as having steered us wrong?
Yeah, and I'll first caveat all this by saying I'm often accused of being a Luddite. while that may be true in certain aspects, I don't think that optimization is all bad. I think optimization as a technology has created some incredible things, right? We wouldn't have the standard of living and the wealth that we have today in the West were it not for optimization. We wouldn't have the safety of certain engineered systems. We wouldn't have modern medicine and dentistry. The pitfall, I think you asked about the pitfall. I just want to make sure I'm
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the pitfall is that we forget other ways of seeing the world, right? You look at a lot of cultures and historically and present day outside of our Western kind of corporate driven culture, and you see very different ways of approaching what one should do or what's right, right? These are often driven by cultural norms or ethics, morals, rather than what is the best or what is going to make the most money or, you know, whatever other variable you're optimizing for. And I think there's a certain richness that's been lost there, along with an increasing fragility that we see in many of our overly optimized systems. They simply break down more frequently than were they not so optimized.
Yeah, one of the things that really struck me was optimizing a system takes out slack in systems. Our ability to react to changes, to difficulties, to changing fundamental situations. Can you talk about our loss of slack as we optimize?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is sort of a trade-off that's been pointed out from a lot of different disciplines. You know, in ecology, you have trade-offs between robustness and strength and fragility, right? or speed rather and fragility. When you think about something as simple as weightlifting or training for athletics, a lot of the building of muscle or of endurance happens not so much in the time of exertion, but in the time of rest, right? When those muscles regenerate and grow. And sleep obviously helps us regenerate. Without sleep or rest, we as organisms start to fail and collapse. And obviously in much larger systems like markets and the electric grid. So I argue in the book that one of the major things that we've lost, or the category of things that we've lost, as we optimize, is this, you know, this concept of slack or downtime or rest.
We're talking to applied mathematician and author Coco Crummy about her new book. It's called Optimal Illusions, The False Promise of Optimization. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest about optimization and its problems? Have you experienced some of these negative impacts in your life of optimization, maybe at your workplace? Have you tried to opt out in some ways? Live off the grid, maybe? We'll talk about that in just a bit. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with author and applied mathematician Coco Crummy. Her new book is called Optimal Illusions, The False Promise of Optimization. Talk about how we became obsessed with efficiency, economies of scale, and how that obsession has brought a lot of negative impacts to people's lives, and maybe what we can do about it. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234. Jeff joins us now in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Good afternoon. I'm very philosophical, so I appreciate this discussion because I consider myself a minimalist, because when I lived out west in Pacific Northwest, Seattle, Portland, that area, I lived in group settings where we had more than one income in each living situation. And we would have group meetings discussing how can we optimize this resource or this service. And a lot of us just fell away thinking, you know, people are not a means to an end, but an end in themselves. And we really fell away thinking that it's kind of best to live a minimal lifestyle and do more with less.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Coco, your thoughts on Jeff's thoughts about humanity and optimization.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think it's a feeling that's emerging, or it's becoming more prominent in recent years. Obviously, the pandemic was a shock to a lot of systems, both large scale economic systems, as well as I think it led to reflection in a lot of people as to whether the path they were on was one that made sense for them. So what you said certainly resonates.
Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. And that actually is a nice segue, Coco, to a lot of your book is talking to people who in one way or another try to opt out or push back against optimization in one way or another. Let's go back to sugar beet farmers. One farmer you talked to over the course of years was one amongst a co-op of farmers who said, I'm going to try not to go with genetically modified foods at that point. Economically speaking, easier said than done. Can you talk about the challenges he faced?
Yeah. And, you know, this was by no means a total back to the land kind of farming operation. It was a sixth generation farm that, you know, utilized a lot of fairly modern technology. And, you know, he just, the owner just didn't want to do GMO. And that in another era would have been a perfectly acceptable and economically viable decision. The problem is that this industry, as with many sectors of agriculture in the US, is that Sugar Beets is run by these co-ops. It's the supply chains are incredibly vertically integrated, right? The co-ops own the processing facilities. They own, in many cases, the transportation, the railroads, or the parts that get the product to the processing facilities. And if everybody else went GMO, there was no way for one holdout to have his crop processed into sugar. So he tried to find workarounds. And I won't ruin the or spoil the end of the story, but it was an arduous path for this particular farmer.
And another path, and you talked to some people, and to an extent, you've done it a little bit yourself, is the idea of, okay, I'm going to opt out. I'm going to live on an island, say, in the Pacific Northwest, or in some other way go off the grid. We can't all do that, though, I don't think. Can you talk about that back to the land concept you mentioned as a reaction to optimization?
Yeah. And, one of the places I land in the book, right, is that it's pretty much impossible for most of us to opt out. I mean, I'm less on the grid, but I'm certainly not off the grid. There's FedEx where I live, right? It may be a little bit slower, but it still exists. The internet exists. It might also be a little bit slower. And as you point out, it's also a choice that in many ways is a luxury today, right? I am lucky enough that I can do work, that is partially remote. That was the case even before a lot of the accommodations for remote work happened due to the pandemic. And that's certainly not the case for a lot, if not most people. And that said, even with that luxury, right, I am tied in all of these ways. So I think while there's this growing desire to slow down or disconnect in certain ways, I think it's a fantasy to believe that you can opt out completely.
Talking to Coco Crummy about her new book, Optimal Illusions, The False Promise of Optimization. Okay, if we don't like living in a completely optimizing world, but we recognize that we can't completely opt out of optimization, what do you recommend people do? How can we start to change our mindset to maybe pick our battles and where we could slow down and avoid the optimization?
Well, I think the first step is exactly what you said, Rob. It's realizing and being aware of how some of these forces work. The technical and cultural forces of optimization. I think for everybody, it looks a little bit different, right? If, some people are perfectly fine living in an optimized and optimizing world. It's thrilling in certain ways. And I certainly wouldn't recommend anything different for people who are content with that. I think for those of us who feel a certain malaise at the speed of things or the pervasiveness of this mindset, it's really about not opting out completely, but returning a little bit to first principles, first principles understanding of how these systems work, right? So I may not be able to buy everything, all my food, all my materials from my local community, but to the extent that I can understand where things come from and make conscious choices about the things that I'm buying from abroad or, that are made outside of my direct reach or using technologies, like I don't understand in minute detail how my computer works. but I've made that choice to accept some of those abstractions and those shortcuts because, it does help me do things that I feel are valuable in the world.
you mentioned from time to time talking to people who might have been your colleagues at MIT or Silicon Valley or wherever about these concepts. I imagine a lot of blank stares. How do you sell this idea of we should worry about optimization to optimization central in the high tech industry world?
Well, you know, I think it's actually gotten a little bit easier since I first conceived of this book, which was in around 2014, 2015 or so, when the tide hadn't yet turned against big tech, right? And we were all still in its enthralled and enchanted, right? We you know, and I'm speaking sort of the collective cultural sentiment was that Twitter and Facebook and Google were, you know, not only these magical innovations that were going to make their founders and shareholders rich, but they were literally going to save the world. They were going to save democracy. They were going to allow creative people to express themselves and find audiences. And I think some of that promise, those promises have perhaps manifested in certain ways, but the tide has really turned, you know, to the point where we see these companies as, you know, as profit-seeking corporations that they are. And so that certainly helped my argument. I think I get fewer blank stares nowadays. But, you know, that techno-utopian mindset is still very much alive. And I think time and history will tell, right, whether these promises of AI and automation and technology kind of saving ourselves from ourselves and granting infinite leisure time and, you know, infinite resources to everybody and equality, you know, and justice to boot, if that actually manifests or we see a sort of different future for technology.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Coco Crummy, talking about her new book, Optimal Illusions, The False Promise of Optimization.